This is Barbara Peters. I'm at the Poison Pen, and it is Sunday,
The 10th.
10th of February. And I have with me two fabulous authors, Stephen Mac Jones and Joe Ide. And I realize that what they have in common to start with is that both of them wrote first novels that went on to win very prestigious awards. So tell us, guys, either one of you, how'd that feel?
It was, I was elated, but it was strange. My experience of a book is sitting at my computer, you know, getting taco juice on my keyboard and talking to my dog. That's my experience. So somebody somewhere else gives you an award. And yes. I thought, well, for this, you know, really for this, sitting here with my dog? So it was strange. It was strange, but I was elated and gratified.
Well, you were actually nominated for several awards, right?
Yeah.
So it was a really big reception.
It was. Very unexpected. I had very low expectations for the book. I mean, I knew I had written a good book, but when I finished it, I was like, who would want to read this? Some guy in the hood, he gets made with blueberry muffins. I did the wrong thing. I mean, that was, when I finished it, that was my, you know, I thought some small, quirky publisher would give the new guy a chance, but I didn't have any idea what would happen. Really.
We'll come back to your screenwriting career beforehand and why you think publishing is better than some other authors might think of. But Stephen, you not only won one award, you won two, like Joe, with multiple things. You won the Hammett Award,
yes,
which is a very prestigious international prize. But then you also won the Nora Wolf Award,
yes,
which is quite different.
Yes, and not unlike Joe, I was just stunned. I still am at these honors because, not unlike Joe, I was just sitting in my family room in my sweats, entertaining myself. I mean, I had been retired from advertising for 8 years. My wife was still going to work. Our kids are grown, so it was just me, my laptop, and Netflix. And you know, Netflix never has enough new content for me.
This is true.
It was just a matter of amusing myself, trying to write something that kept me interested, entertained, and informed. And initially, the book was, it was met by Soho with, the quote from my agent, Stephanie Evans, was, they're on the fence about it, which is something you never want to hear.
Well, I was between the cracks. That was me.
You hadn't even made it to the top of the fence?
The first six publishers passed.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, we don't know how to market it. It's not really a mystery. It's not really a thriller. It's not a heist thing. And,
Well, both of you are writing about non-mainstream parts of society, which we could get to. And Stephen, additionally, at Soho, they broke into mystery. They only published authors who were writing in international landscapes. So, you know, ground was broken when they took up an Alaskan author, but apparently they thought Alaska was foreign. And now I thought maybe Detroit is also foreign.
Well, Detroit does have that foreign sense to it. People can't seem to make head nor tail of what Detroit is and what Detroit is becoming. Which brings me back to Soho was on the fence about the book because they wanted to have more of a Detroit feel. And so I pretty much went, asked for 30 days and exploded the manuscript and started putting in everything that I knew, felt, over 40 years of living in Detroit. And that's what finally brought me into their fold.
Detroit's a border city, so, you know, I suppose there's, I mean, we don't think of that necessarily, but, you know, it's right up there next to Canada, which, at least for the moment, is not yet getting a wall. I'm so tired of this whole bit about border security and the law. I just want to cry. So.
You know, if they do decide to build a wall along Ontario, the province of Ontario, they're going to have to figure out how to wall in 95,000 square miles of water.
So, that's great.
Yeah.
What are they walling out? Wolves and elk?
Well, in some ways, the Canadian government from time to time has flown in labor from Mexico to work the large Canadian farm system. But after the growing season, it's like, you know, there's still that pull, that tug of the American dream.
Yeah.
That mythos that we've perpetuated over so many generations. So people find their way into Detroit and through
Michigan. Instead of El Paso, then, in addition to, according to what we're hearing, El Paso, so Detroit's actually a porous entry point. I hadn't really thought about that until just this minute when you said that, but that's really true.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
Well, fortunately for you, it's easier to write in more things about Detroit than, for example, rework your entire plot. So, you know, 30 days adding Detroit was probably not as daunting as if they'd said, this ending sucks, do it over.
And I still haven't scratched the surface of that city.
So what about you, Joe? When Mulholland accepted your book, did they want you to do any significant reworking?
No. There was, line editing, and we switched a couple of chapters around, and they had to figure out my style. In terms, I write these long run-on sentences with no commas. They had to wrap their heads around that. It was quibbles, though. It was just quibbles.
Right. Not major revision.
Yeah.
But as I mentioned earlier, you come from screenwriting, because I remember a memorable event you did here with Melissa Scrivener Love, in which afterward, when the three of us went out to dinner, you both talked about how much more wonderful publishing was than working in a writer's room. And I reeled in shock, because I'm so used to authors critiquing their publishers, and you were going, what a great experience it was.
What writer's room?
I've never been in a writer's room. I worked a lot. Mm-hmm. I worked for most of the majors. I sold specs, did rewrites, all that stuff. And nothing ever got made. And it got so frustrating to work on something for months, rewrite it four or five times, producers are happy, the executives are happy, and then it would just fall out of development because somebody else had something similar in the pipeline, head of the studio gets fired, just one Hollywood reason after another. I wrote an action thing for DMX and what's his name? Not Kid Rock, the other guy. Anyway, for these two rappers, and one of them wanted $10 million. So DMX wanted $10 million. That was the end of it. No, this was a long time ago, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So everybody I met was smart, but you just wonder, you know, all these smart people in a room, and that's the movie you came up with? Really? Truly? And pretty much a lot of people are just rude, just flat out rude. I pitched to a big time producer and he sat across from me and talked on the phone.
While you were pitching?
Yeah.
All right.
Just things like that. And I never came out of a meeting going, God, that was a really nice guy. I'd like to hang with him. Never, not once.
So So for you, publishing was not only more polite, but you were also more in control. I remember that was the theme that we talked about.
Yeah, in the movie business, there's, very few writers who anybody cares about. And nobody cares what the writer thinks. And they'll give you instructions, but they don't remember those instructions when you give them the script and say, I followed instructions, and they say, we don't like it. And so to be able to write something that I wanted to write was a huge motivation for me. Just huge.
And then to get all that validation from doing it must have been, did it actually make up for all those difficult years?
No.
Do you know, I once asked Lee Child if his huge success with Jack Reacher had ever really made up for his being fired from the BBC, and he said no. So you're not alone. Well, Stephen, you're in advertising, and you know, a surprising number of authors in crime fiction anyway, but maybe more so. That have come from advertising. Dorothy Sayers, for example.
Yes.
Clive Cussler, who, was a big advertising guy. Why do you think that would be true?
Because we're all looking for an easy way to make a buck. Advertising is, for those who can't get into show business, advertising is the closest thing. Where you actually get a steady paycheck for as long as they like you. I guess one of the reasons why a lot of writers come from advertising is because early on we get the knowledge that writing is rewriting is rewriting. You can come up with, like you were talking about, Joe, you can come up with follow instructions, what the client wants, and the client forgot what he or she wanted, so you have to rewrite. And I think that is a motivation for a lot of folks that have come out of advertising and gone into.
When I wrote IQ, it was the first time that I'd ever written something for myself, and I didn't think about agents or TV shows or anything. My mantra was, shut the fuck up and write. Every morning, that's what I said. And it was incredibly liberating.
Yeah, I can certainly see that.
Yes.
And from Steve, I can certainly see that, if you, both of you, were used to working with words, so you already had that facility. It was just a matter of crafting a novel.
Yes.
It wasn't really learning, it wasn't remedial writing or writing 101.
Actually, for me, it was.
Was it?
My long form prose, I thought, hey, I'm making a good living. I can do this. My long form prose was awful. It was cringeworthy.
Really?
I mean.
Oh, because you'd been writing scripts.
Yes.
Oh, right.
So if there's a nice house in the suburbs, you just write exterior. Nice house in the suburbs. And I was appalled. And it took me the first year just to learn to write clear, decent prose.
Yes.
And then the following 2 years, I figured out my own writing thing. But I did not know how to write.
So far in this interview, I have learned not to make assumptions.
Go ahead.
Now it's a good lesson for me all the way around. Well, we only have a couple of minutes left, but I wanted to ask you quickly. You chose to write about Mexican Town in Detroit as opposed to like General Motors headquarters or something. Why was that?
I wanted a character who was the product of, who was African-American and Mexican-American, the two largest minorities in Detroit, and minorities that have rarely seen eye to eye. So I wanted him to be a product of these cultures just to show that there was no dichotomy in him, that he took the best from both cultures and he owned it. He wasn't wondering who he was. He knows pretty much exactly who he is. And I've said this before, but in a lot of ways, August is my way of thanking my parents, because it's about those quiet heroes that make heroes.
That's a very nice way to put it.
It is. Plus, you empowered him with a backstory, which we haven't got time to go into, and enough money to allow him to choose things. And Joe, with IQ, you decided to write a guy in the South LA. Do I have it right? Southeast? South Central LA. So he too is from a non-mainstream community, but a large one, and a significant one.
Those years were the most impactful, and so I never considered anything else. Sherlock Holmes, I've always been devoted to him, and so Sherlock in the Hood was my only idea. I didn't have any other. I didn't have any other places. I didn't have any other characters. That was it.
Unfortunately, they can't hear your hand bump here, but I think that's very clear. You know, if you only have one idea, it's good that it's a terrific one. So thank you, gentlemen. We're going to go forth and talk again on video, but I really appreciate you taking a couple of minutes to chat with me.